Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap?
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Welcome along, football show. Joe Malloy with you and Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent along for the ride. Hello, Dan.
Hi, Joe. How are things?
Yeah, very well. Later on, Gareth Roberts of the Anfield Wrap will give us the Liverpool view. Things not good this season, not taking off in the way they might have cautiously hoped after a good performance against Arsenal. In the meantime, we have much to discuss. Latest in the Champions League this evening, Bayern Munich have pulled a goal back against PSG after a lightning start by PSG in Munich, where it's about minus 1 degree, apparently. It's very cold over there at the moment. Kylian Mbappe after 3 minutes, Neymar with the assist. Marquinhos after 28 minutes, Neymar with the assist. And Choupo Moting has pulled one back for Bayern. So it's 2-1 PSG with two away goals. Chelsea also with an away goal, courtesy of Mason Mount. 32 minutes. Jorginho fizzed a ball into Mount on the edge of the area. I've seen this goal. I haven't seen the other ones. We're having some television problems here, Dan. I should disclose that. So that's what's happening. But Jorginho fizzed a ball into Mason Mount, edge of the area. Defender badly committed himself, it must be said. Gambled on trying to intercept the pass. And Mount, with his left foot, took the ball brilliantly. He spun on the turn as the defender went sliding in front of him. And then he whacked the ball into the net. Keeper might have saved it as well. So it sounds like I'm taking away from the Mount goal through the defender and the keeper, which I sort of am. But it was brilliant play all the same. For a man, a young boy, derided in many quarters as just, you know, Frank Lampard's pet, he's blossoming now, Dan.
Did you hear who was raving about him the other day? Roy Keane, no less. A glowing statements about Mason Mount. Really, basically the thrust of it was, well, he likes him as a player,
yeah,
but you never hear anything about him off the park. That was Keane. There's like, does anyone know anything about Mason Mount? I mean, listen, even Roy Keane's on Instagram, so we can't really have a go at Mason Mount. Been on it if he is.
Yeah.
But like, the general thrust of his point was he likes the cut of Mason Mount's jib, basically. You know, there's no messing with him. And it was a good goal, yeah. I've had a bit of a nightmare the last two nights. You've had technical issues. I'm going through that phase which people can relate to, where I every time I flick from one game to the other, I miss a goal.
Yeah.
Like last night, I went through a phase trying to keep an eye on three games last night, because there was a young Irish kid playing for Norwich in the Championship. I was really interested in that, and yeah, I mean there was goals in each game, and I just kept flicking from one to the other, just as I missed a goal. So it's the moral of the story is, you know, invest in some kind of multi-screen system for nights like this, you know. So I was watching Chelsea for a portion of the first half. I know you've had tech issues there. I was watching Chelsea for a portion of the first half, but I really should have been watching all of Bayern PSG by the sounds of it.
Why were you watching Chelsea? I could have told you at 5-8 that was the wrong idea.
No, no, I know it was, but I can tell you a boring domestic story if I want. But really, it's basically for factors beyond my control. I got caught and I had to sort of watch the Chelsea game for a few minutes. And I did actually get the goal, so it wasn't too bad. But this Bayern PSG game has had multiple substitutions, multiple goals, a bit of a snowstorm vibe. And the bits of it that I've seen, which was coming up to half time, and you know, a bit early on, it's just one of these games where there's something happening every minute, you know, multiple chances, shots, corners, everything.
Well, certainly Bayern can feel aggrieved at the scoreline because they've had 63% possession, but maybe more pertinently, they have had 15 shots to PSG's two shots, and yet PSG have two goals for those two shots. So,
but I suppose the third-minute goal changes the dynamic a bit, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, if you have a situation where PSG go ahead early, it was even more onus on Bayern. Like, would the stats be the same if they hadn't scored early, true, you can sort of debate that.
No, it's a fair point. With their pace, I'm sure they're quite happy to sit back now and try and hit them on the break. So, like I said, Gareth Roberts of the Anfield Wrap will join us later on. Extraordinary night last night in many ways. On the Man City game, if Andy Warhol is right, and in the future, Dan, everybody in the world will be famous for 15 minutes, then Octavian Sovra, your time is now. Because Octavian has been dominating the world of football over the last 24 hours. He is the assistant referee, the linesman in old vernacular, who approached Erling Haaland in the tunnel and asked him for his autograph and whipped out his book. Or even Erling thought this is a bit much, but maybe he's just so trained as a football prodigy to do what needs to be done. So he gave the assistant referee the autograph. And I could see John Stones walked by at one point and had a second look as if to say, am I seeing this? He is signing it. Okay. And Haaland went up the stairs and the assistant referee was delighted with himself, which was just odd, to say the least. The other big talking point was the Bellingham goal overturned, which was a dreadful decision. The issue here seems to be that the referee blew the whistle before play could continue and Bellingham could stick the ball in the net. And so at which point, everything after that whistleblowing is null and void. So the goal is cancelled. Now, in this climate where linesmen and women are not putting up their flags for 10, 20 seconds sometimes after an obvious offside, for the referee to have blown the whistle the instant Bellingham put in that challenge on Ederson seemed like a crazy decision. But that's where we were last night.
Yeah, although I think, isn't there a defence being mounted of that Romanian assistant? I'm just kind of checking it up here. But I think the defence is that he was trying to get the autograph in order to, I think, raffle the autograph off for an autism charity. So if that's the case, sort of puts a slightly different slant in it, but it's still not great.
Go into the dressing room. Go into the dressing room.
Well, clearly, did he think on a closed doors match that, like, you know, you could get away with it in a different way? Like, isn't that the tunnel in Man City, the tunnel club where you pay, like, I don't know, $1 million or something to, like, have some tunnel access, you know, to see all the stuff that goes on in the tunnel? And maybe he just thought, like, I mean, listen, I do agree with you. I mean, it's always a bit of a taboo thing where you see the odd person occasionally popping up in, like, a mix zone trying to get an autograph of a player. And that's, like, to me, is like a cardinal error. That's like, you know, off you go. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a sort of a hanging offence. It's meant to be some kind of, I mean, this is meant to be an arena where players can scowl at journalists without any fear of being asked to, like, sign something, you know. But I think it goes an extra level for the match officials to do it, particularly, you know, when there's a controversial match official decision, as you mentioned there. I mean, Haaland clearly a bit perplexed by the whole thing, but it just goes to show how box office he is, though, as well, too. Like, you know,
superstar.
You mentioned famous Man City players walking past. It's like, nope. No, we're not having you. There's only one star here, and he's not paying for the Premier League champions-elect.
No,
you know,
absolutely. That jumped out to me as well, that Haaland is just so by distance, head and shoulders above everyone, literally and figuratively as well. So look, maybe Octavian's motives were a bit more noble than I had thought, Dan. But either way,
he's not going to get to see him in the dressing room, probably with distancing, Joe, as well. I mean, you've absolutely slaughtered this fella here. On the basis of a
he can't
you know,
be doing that.
Pitcher.
No, he can't be doing that.
You're completely targeted.
I support his cause.
He was doing it for charity, Joe, and he probably has to go after some COVID distant rule. So it was his respect for the protocols meant that he had to embarrass himself.
Well, he's practically hanging out of Haaland. I mean, he's not giving Haaland much social distancing. And also, I mean, are you telling me it's going to come as a shock to Octavian that they have cameras in the tunnels now? I mean, this has been a recent development.
And listen, safe to say we our important disclaimer is that we do not know the assistant in question or his intentions. But if he wasn't planning to do it for charity, he now, of course, has to do it for charity, which is the situation that he's in.
I mean, so exactly. Like, that's your way out of this, Octavian.
It's like, I mean, for the sort of the autism awareness campaign in Romania or something, someone is going to be very much onto this now, thinking it's an opportunity. But listen, maybe his intentions are very much genuine, and we should. It's just not the done thing, though. I assume he's probably breached some kind of protocol. And listen, UEFA will probably come down harder than they would on racism or something. Do you know what I mean? So, like, this is obviously what happens in this world of ours. I forgive him a small bit, but obviously, you know, don't ever do it in a mix zone or it'll be hell to pay.
Yeah, I'm sure. So look, City have a slightly precarious lead now going over to Dortmund, not least if Haaland has a few good moments. You know, they've an away goal. 2-1's a really good away result there. Meanwhile, 3-1 in Madrid doesn't feel as good a result, I think we can say. There was an odd quality to this game throughout, wasn't there, at the Alfredo Di Stefano Stadium? I mean, it really did feel like you were watching a reserve game.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's well, if you remember at the start...
By the way, not because of the quality before anyone jumps and texts in.
No, I know what you're saying.
Because the stadium itself is the training ground.
But it's sort of interesting that they've done that. I mean, there's obviously, like, this has been the case in Madrid all year. And I remember, I think they lost to Shakhtar Donetsk at the start of the competition. I think it was like a 6 o'clock game. And it was just surreal, like, in a training ground watching this happen. And you're thinking, is this... You know, like it's a sort of an alternate reality, but is it actually pragmatic in a weird way? Because I've spoken, listen, my closed doors experience is limited to League of Ireland games, and then, you know, which are generally very small stadiums anyway. But the exception, obviously, is the Ireland international games. And there is something in the Aviva being so cavernous and so big, and it almost is, it's brought home even more. That there's no fans there, and I actually don't know what the reason for Madrid going there is. Is there a sort of a reason behind going there? But maybe like
there's work being done in the Bernabeu.
Is there work being done? I actually wasn't 100%.
Yeah, they're redeveloping the whole stadium.
The whole thing. Okay. I wasn't sure if it was a case that it was closed completely.
No, it's like a Tottenham Hotspur stadium job.
The full job is it? Okay. Well, there's my knowledge exposed. But like either way, right? I sort of can see why it feels like why it might be conducive to a more sort of a open game at times. It's just like, you know, there's no cameras, there's no big, you know, gaping arena, which I can imagine players get lost in sometimes. But I was listening to you lads for a while last night when I was out. I think you had the old commentator's curse before Madrid met at 3-1, saying they don't look that good.
They didn't.
And then they obviously score, which is what happens. But like, you know, you did look at that game last night and you're basically both teams missing, you know, their first choice centre halves, and you're thinking, well, yeah, there could be a chance of some goals in this and it could be pretty open. But like, I don't know, it was just, put it like this, you're watching Bayern PSG at the moment and it feels like a different game to that game last night. It actually really is. And even from flicking Porto Chelsea over to this, like, just this game is really a level up. And even like, so you wouldn't be convinced that Madrid are going to do anything just because they've won that game last night and should probably go through, although, you know, not necessarily a foregone conclusion. But it just feels like, I don't know, some of the errors were pretty basic. Some of it was pretty sloppy from both sides. I mean, the third goal for Madrid even is just like, oh.
I'm glad you mentioned that one. That one, in some ways, I know we'll probably touch on Trent briefly, although Damien Delaney talked about him at Lent last night, so I don't want to over-egg that one. It feels like Trent's had a lot of heat over this week. He picked it. It was a bad combo of the Monday Night Football into last night for Trent Alexander-Arnold. But the third goal jumped out to me as well as just being really worrying from a Liverpool point of view. Like, this is definitely end of era Madrid, and La Liga teams have struggled physically in these big European games. And so I thought, you know, Keita, for instance, that spoke of an intent to press manically. And yet that third goal, it's a throw. Like, I was mentioning the news round earlier, this is a team in Liverpool who have a throw-in coach. So this is Trent Alexander-Arnold gets back and saves the day from a corner. This is a 2v1 breakaway in a corner. He saves the day. You now, everyone then, you know, catches their breath and trundles up the pitch. You have a chance to get set, to get your line set, to get good. And it's throw to Benzema under no real pressure. And it's just like neat, tidy football. Benzema back to Modric under no pressure, and then Modric saunters into the box under no pressure and just passes the ball onto Vinicius. No real pressure. Like, you think of goals and it should be last minute lunging tackles, desperation to knock a striker off balance in any way, to distract in any way, to stop in any way, every sinew being stretched. You think of Fernandes against Brighton where he delays that pass and almost has his ankle broken for a good measure. You know, that is what it should hurt to score goals. And do you remember a couple of years ago, Setanta Sports put on a promotional day and they had like Clayton Blackmore and Frank Stapleton and Dion Dublin and Viv Anderson?
Yes, we got to play against them.
Yeah, we got to play five-a-side with these players. And the third goal for Real Madrid reminded me of that game of Astro.
Joe, I was just going to say it was a five-a-side goal. That's exactly what it was like, a five-a-side goal.
Where Viv and Dion and Clayton Frank couldn't run anymore. Like, evidently couldn't run. They're men of a certain age now. And yet they kind of, they got warmed up and they got into it. And pretty quickly, if you left them alone and didn't put them under any pressure, they could start fizzing the ball around really quickly and make you look very silly, because they're professional footballers. So they're in a different stratosphere to the football journalists who got invited around. And I got this flashback watching that goal last night to me and you and Viv and Frank and Dion, and how at a five-a-side level, these men twice our age were destroying us. And it
so was, you're effectively saying Liverpool are performing like a bunch of sort of unfit 20-something journalists playing against ex-professionals. Like,
in a way, if you want to twist my words, yes, that is what I'm saying. But ultimately, I'm making the point that even this much dismissed Real Madrid team, which are, you know, coming towards the end, they're not in an upward curve, and Modric and Benzema and these great players are not getting any better. They're hanging on a bit. And Liverpool, in that moment, allowed them to hang on. Just made it so easy. Put no premium on physicality being an area of the game that's important. It was just a shocking moment for everything they stand for.
Yeah, no, and I do take your point. And we're actually, I mean, and just this Bayern game is absorbing just the level of it, by the way. But just the, like, we're so used to, like, okay, now the team's obviously, like, there's a real aggressive press. And you do occasionally see bad goals conceded by good teams, right? But they're generally the comical type of goal that are a product of, like, a really aggressive pressing or, you know, that forcing a mistake, you know, and it, you know, it comes from that. But not that type of goal. Not one where basically there's a statuesque defence being played through at very minimal pace, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's not that type of goal. We tend to see more goals at the sort of the elite level now of, like, even counter-attacking goals or teams overplaying it and getting errors. But this was more, it was almost in slow motion, almost more so like the type of goal that a team, like, sitting in concedes, you know? Like, you have a game plan. Like a goal Ireland would concede if they were really frustrating you sometime. Like, you know, that it's actually just very straightforward how they concede it when they've got bodies behind the box. And it's not a real Liverpool type of goal to concede for all their defensive issues. But, I mean, you do look at it and you realise, listen, it's Kabak is just in there and Phillips, you know, it's a big ask for them. But there was obviously more to it than that, because, as you say, they have a throw-in coach and it was more of a collective, collective malaise. And, you know, it's those little bits of, like, people who've played will tell you, you know, that when a team is really at maximum intensity and plugged in, they don't concede those type of goals. But Liverpool just, they've had these moments this season where they just look like they've lost that, whatever that is, you know, and can be hard to get that back.
Yeah. The only acceptable goal to concede from that scenario is if Rory Delap pings in one of his finest and there's nothing you can do about the header. But the short throw to Benzema, then giving it back to Modric, there should be more traffic around Modric than he can handle. And then, like, he's under no pressure playing that pass. And Vinicius, who, by the way, played better than I've ever seen him play before. I know he's a coming thing and inconsistent, but he looked good.
No, he was good.
Byron goal.
Goal.
I've now got the TV. Sorry, we fixed it. The lads, Trojan work behind the scenes. Thomas Muller with a header from a free kick. Snow is coming down in Munich, by the way. And cross in from the right-hand side. Kimmich with the cross. And it's a lovely flick-on header from Thomas Muller into the far corner. So 2-2 after 60 minutes there, Dan.
It's been coming. Since half-time, they've been very much top. Although Mbappe had a proper break there. The classic sort of, just as we were talking about it, how you get done is on the counter. And they nearly scored PSG. I think it might have been an offside flag. But, yeah, I mean, the pace of their attack and play has been very good, Bayern, just in there. They got a couple of things wrong. Hansi Flick, he brought Alphonso Davies on after half an hour. He made another change then before half time, which might have been enforced. I'm not 100% sure, but Boateng, come on. But it's been one of these games that's taken on a real personality of its own. And I mean, as I look now, it's, you know, Bayern on the attack again, looking for more. So I don't think the end of the goal scoring is here at 2-0.
No. PSG have every chance of scoring a goal on the counter-attack based on that Mbappe chance, and Bayern have chances coming, so there's half an hour to go here. There's plenty of twists and turning in this game remaining. The other thing about last night from a Liverpool point of view was the selection of Keita, which Klopp addressed afterwards, and he confirmed that his substitution on 42 minutes was not tactical. It was just that he wasn't in the game. And he was asked, you know, why Keita on this night, huge night, and Thiago on the bench. It was kind of interesting what Klopp said. Effectively, he was saying that he couldn't ignore Keita's performances in training any longer. Mm. That Keita had been just that good in training that he demanded inclusion. And also he mentioned his ability to dribble by people. I mean, I'd kind of thought Keita was picked because he's got more legs than Thiago if they wanted to put Madrid under huge pressure. You know, this vulnerable centre of defence, let's press the living hell out of this team and see what they're really made of back there. But Klopp mentioned Keita's ability to dribble by Madrid, and then, you know, Klopp just said, look, in his own words, we couldn't avoid the substitution. I don't want it to be a big story. He wasn't the only one. It's a big story, not that Keita had a bad game. It's probably a bigger story that Klopp chose that game to put in this guy because of, you know, his first start in a month because of how well he's playing in training. I mean, let's test the waters against Arsenal maybe first, kind of a thing. So it backfired.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you have to believe what he said there as well too, and that's the reason. But
do you think he's giving him a little crumb there? You know, he's been going so well.
Possibly, yeah. Possibly. Yeah, I mean, listen, that like it's strange now. Like, we've had a couple of first half substitutions in this game tonight. Like it's almost a taboo thing. But does it, you know, is it going through a phase of being acceptable to do it now? You kind of wonder why it doesn't happen more sometimes. If something is going so badly wrong, yet the coaching convention sometimes that you wait till half time, or it's not even the convention, it's more, you know, it's a respect thing, you wait till half time. But I mean, it becomes a big story when someone is taken off in the first half because of how unusual it is. And as much as it's a reflection on the player, it can be a reflection on the coach too, and that their tactical impression of the game was wrong. Klopp, he's going to say that. He's going to say something like that, I suppose. But it was a big call for him that ultimately, it would appear that he got it wrong. As much as everyone's a genius in hindsight.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll talk to Gareth Roberts of the Anfield Wrap later on. Meanwhile, some news today around Euro 2020 and Dublin doesn't look good. So what's happened here? I know this was UEFA had set a deadline for all 12 host cities to, you know what, or get off the pot, as in, what can you guarantee us? Can you guarantee us 25% capacity at these games? UEFA wanted to know that today. So Dublin have responded.
Yeah, and they've basically given the honest answer, which was no, they're not in a position to guarantee it. This is a story that's been rumbling on. The extent to which people are energised by it is debatable, it would have to be said. I mean, if Ireland had qualified for the Euros, and were competing this summer, this would be the biggest story in town. You know, like this would be the sort of leading the news bulletins. I'd say, you know, politicians would be fending questions about it all the time. Like we would have been talking about it at the start tonight, and you know,
not the linesman.
Are we going to miss out? You know, the chance. Like this is our chance to see Ireland play in a major tournament at home. And come on, government, like give us a lift. Like, you know, 15,000 people, it can be done. Look at these stats and outdoor transmission, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not really the mood on the ground, is it?
No. Nobody cares. Nobody cares.
No,
because
they don't.
So the matches themselves, the Group E meeting of Poland and Slovakia on June 14th, I mean, honestly, no one's going to watch that game. Followed by Sweden and Slovakia 4 days later.
And they will watch the game, Joe. It's the major tournament. People will watch the game.
Okay, right? Okay. But you know what I'm saying.
We are on a sports show here.
Sweden against Slovakia. Put it this way, Dan. If it's sunny outside and I've got a better offer, Sweden and Slovakia, I'll catch the highlights. Okay?
But I mean, listen, that's a reflection on you, Joe.
No, it's not.
There are people out there who will watch every major tournament game.
Okay, fine. I'm just trying to talk for the general feeling, mood on the ground.
Your advice to the man on the street.
If the man on the street is itching to watch Poland, Slovakia, then I need to rethink things.
The thing is, if you've watched Ireland play Poland in recent times, you'll find there'll be a lot of men on the streets around, they're all Polish. And I suppose there is obviously a community here who would...
Fair point.
Probably got tickets for these games and will be relishing it. So I think for them, it's obviously there are people
Rephrase then, Mr. Pedantic McDonald. The Polish and Slovakian fans will watch Poland against Slovakia. Obviously, look, in terms of attending here, sorry, if I can get a ticket for a Euro 2020 game, I mean, I'm there 100%. I mean, geez, to be at the game is different. But I'm just on TV. Like, I'm just saying, we don't have...
No.
These aren't great games. These aren't great games.
No, so I know what you... Listen, and I am being pedantic.
Yeah, you are. But you are. And I'm going to finish my point. the last 16 game involving England was slated in for June 29th, possibly involving England, the last 16 game.
Yeah.
The broader point and the quality of games either way. I guess the big attraction for all of us when all this came about was, one, potentially Ireland would be there and we'd have a home match in the Euros, which is now gone. But then secondly, even with these, you know, not exactly stellar games for the neutral, that there'd be, if you're in Dublin, I suppose, a sense of festival and carnival.
Yes.
And an influx of all these fans and, you know, Swedish people everywhere and the Polish community in Dublin absolutely coming out. I suspect the Ireland fans in the stadium would have supported Poland. You know, I think that actually, and that's just occurred to me now, that would have been a lovely thing, actually. I think, so a predominantly Poland and Irish audience and however many Slovakian fans there, I think it would have been a home game for Poland, which would have been kind of lovely. And then they would have had the same against Sweden. I think Mbappe's just done something ridiculous, has he? Based on where he was standing when he hit based on where his celebration has started, I haven't seen the goal.
This is a goal, Joe. This is a great goal by Mbappe, yeah. Pochettino looking pretty happy. He's put PSG 3-2 up with a classic one. He's given the goalkeeper the eyes. He's got the edge of the box. It's a one-on-one situation. And you're sort of expecting him with his right foot to curl it towards the far post. But instead, he sort of shapes. And I don't know, has he nutmegged someone with the shot? But he's found it at the near post. It's exceptionally good.
Oh, yeah. Through the legs, near post.
Yeah.
Shapes up for the Henri far corner. And... goes near post.
True both hangs legs. Yeah, really. I mean, it's not an amazing goal, but it's just like for a player, it's just like, this is a player in quality.
Yeah.
You can do a lot of things, you know.
what caught me is the ball, when it rolls into the net, then rolls up the netting and into the roof of the net. And it was at that moment I glanced up and saw the ball like in the roof of the net and Mbappe running away. And I thought it was ridiculous. Instead, it's just... standard ridiculous from Mbappe with
just standard world class.
Yeah,
standard world class.
8 goals in 8 Champions League games. So sorry to finish off my point very quickly and finally. That was the real appeal of a full stadium and festival and Dublin coming out on summer's evenings and drinking beers and just, God, a world that when it comes back we'll never take for granted again. But you know, you picture the scene all over Dublin, all of us drinking,
yeah,
all of us standing outside pubs, having the crack with different fans. And hell, we might even throw on the Irish jerseys and sing a few songs ourselves, because, you know, why not? Let's just be a bit silly.
Yeah.
Whereas now, frankly, Poland, Slovakia, whether it happens at the Aviva or some other homogenous looking stadium, is completely irrelevant to me.
No, this is the problem, as you mentioned. And I think even like politically, and it's a reflection of the world that we live in, that like if there was major political capital in this, you would see the politicians, as they do when it comes to these events, they would be right behind it. But I think, you know, at the moment, obviously, things are pretty fragile with sort of even hotel quarantine and getting the vaccinations done. And the attitude towards like people coming into the country is sort of heightened to some degree. And even though it's a couple of months away, and even though there's loads of polls in Ireland, like, you just know it's the type of thing where, well, hang on, like there's, you know, if the stadium is a quarter full, have people flown in? What's happened? Like, our attitude at the moment towards people on the streets and revelry in certain places would be more, less welcoming and more, I'm not sure about this. Mm-hmm. Particularly at a time, and this is probably the more pertinent point, that like there's still no date around when we can get fans into stadiums for any of our sporting events here, be it, you know, Gaelic games or rugby or League of Ireland or whatever it might be. And as a result, is this the event that people want to throw their energies behind as a test case or a study, when it's possible, you know, that there's fans have travelled from outside to be here for it? I just, like, there's a lot of things, and as you mentioned as well, like, you know, okay, what's the trade off for this when this was announced, you know, in conjunction with Dublin City Council and government? It's all these stats about the benefits to the Exchequer and all of that, you know, and the thousands of people coming here and that is gone. Now, there will be people out listening there who maybe did buy tickets through the raffle, or not through the raffle, you know, through the UEFA system. They got allocated one. I know some had a chance to sell up their tickets, or and they'll be fine if the game is moved from another jurisdiction. But I'm sure there's people out there who wouldn't mind going to see the games because they've already paid their money for them.
Sure.
But it's just not a hill anyone's going to die on here, yeah. I don't think, you yeah. know, to fight for these games. And I think if, you know, it would be far more politically favourable, actually, for government to say, actually, from June, we're going to have X amount of people in the stadium at, say, you know, League of Ireland games, you know, Championship, GAA matches, whatever it might be, at a localised level where people haven't travelled, for example, you know, home fans only to games. That's a better case to fight than these games in the Aviva. And to be honest, anyone I've spoken to, you know, on this, from be it FAI or UEFA or whatever, it sort of feels like it's inevitable it's going to be taken off Dublin unless something bizarre happens. But I think they know it's not going to be a mad backlash.
No, there won't be. There won't be. And do you know of the other 12 host cities, finally, are Manny going to be relinquishing their games, or do we know yet?
Well, no, see, at the moment, like, see, every other host nation is basically given a commitment of sorts that they'll have fans. Right. Now, they're all vulnerable to, obviously a change in the virus and a deterioration. Like, Scotland were under pressure, but Scotland are in it. So there's a bit of a different thing going on with Scotland. And this was the thing, and this is from my inquiries on it. Like, UEFA could, in theory, press ahead and say, OK, Dublin, you can have your games behind closed doors, but that would have posed problems with the other countries, because UEFA have almost put pressure on all of those, or urged them strongly to allow fans into stadiums. So if all of a sudden a couple of nations who maybe felt reticent about it read, oh, Dublin have got the all clear to play behind closed doors, they'd be like, well, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
You know, we've committed. So, but some of the quotes from other places today are like, yeah, we've said we're going to have 12,000 at our games, but we're not sure. But I think, in fairness, the Irish response has been more, listen, we can't guarantee this, lads. That's just the way it's going to be. And in some respects, that's maybe a better approach, to be honest, now, than be faced with some situation in June at the last minute, which would be pretty bad.
And that's this pan-European idea shelved, really, isn't it? Germany hosts Euro 2024, Turkey hosts it in 28. So if we want to see Euro games here, we're going to have to host the tournament in some capacity.
Well, yeah. Well, listen, we've got World Cup 2030, Joe. I mean, how could you forget that we're going to get to live vicariously through other people's experiences then? Listen, I mean, really, the pan-European idea was a legacy project from Platini,
yeah.
And from John Delaney, from our perspective. So a lot of the people who were driving forces behind it aren't around.
Yeah.
And really, like, during a pandemic, the concept of a tournament spread across 12 countries is particularly unfortunate.
It sure is. OK. Bayern Munich 2, PSG 3. That is the game of the evening in the snow at Munich, 75 minutes on the clock. Meanwhile, in Seville, where it's not snowing, it's Porto 0, Chelsea 1, Mason Mount with the goal there. So we're expecting more goals over the next 15 minutes in Munich. Next up, we are talking to Gareth Roberts from the Anfield Wrap.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
You're welcome back. So, Shopu Moting, who scored Bayern Munich's first goal of the game, was put in there one-on-one. Turns out he was a mile offside. I don't think he realised that at the time. Keeper saved it anyway. It is still Bayern Munich 2, PSG 3. This is just an amazing game in the snow in Munich. Two serious teams going at it. The jeopardy of knockout football. It is brilliant. 77 minutes on the clock. Football on Off the Ball is with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. Over in Seville, more pedestrian, I think, in comparison to events at Munich. Porto 0, Chelsea 1, still courtesy of the Mason Mount goal. Now, Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent is still with us. Very happy to say we are joined by Gareth Roberts of the Anfield Wrap. Gareth, how you doing?
I've been better, mate, I've got to be honest.
I mean, given, I guess, a few factors, the performance against Arsenal, the stability increasingly at the back four, if not total faith for obvious reasons, but at least it wasn't a different back four every 5 minutes. Fabinho back in midfield, Jota with a bit of form. I sensed a kind of cautious hope, coupled, by the way, with, Real Madrid end of era talk, Sure, they're only our lads, Benzema, Modric. You know, they need walking sticks at this stage. I sensed a kind of cautious hope that actually Liverpool might have a nice final portion to this season, and yet, boy, were we wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's how a lot of us felt. You know, it was three wins on the sprint for Liverpool, as you say. We took a bit of hope from Kabak and Phillips looking a little bit more like a partnership. And that we were saying on the Anfield Wrap, there was a lot of little things coming together that made you think, hello, why not? And then there was the romance of a possible semi against Chelsea, a possible final even in Istanbul. I mean, you know, I never mind football fans getting carried away. I think it's what football fans should do. But as you say, it was quite the journey back down to earth last night against Real. It's fair to say they had Liverpool's number. They attacked Liverpool's weaknesses. But equally, Liverpool were just not on it whatsoever. There's no one really on the pitch last night for Liverpool, I think you could say, put in a decent shift. I think from front to back, you could say everyone had a bit of a stinker. You know, the confidence wasn't there. They looked nervous. Real Madrid started much, much better. But Liverpool's pressing wasn't there either. The energy wasn't there. And I was really surprised by that, because I thought, at the very least, that's what you expect to see. You don't give those lads, you said, they've got walking sticks. And we were saying similar as well. You don't give those lads time, because lads with walking sticks who were once good at football can still kick it and can still find a man if you allow them to. And that, you know, look at Cruz. Everyone's talking about the brilliant ball he plays, but he literally points to where he's going to play it for the opening goal, and no one closes him down. So, yeah, it was surprisingly poor from Liverpool, I thought.
Yeah, we were even just remarking here before you joined us, Gareth, about the third goal, where it's a throw-in, and you would think, well, any professional team, not least one with a throw-in coach, you know, this was a very celebrated appointment once upon a time. They have a chance to get set, you know, and so it's Benzema to Modric to Vinicius, and I don't know if anyone even touched them.
Yeah, he's just allowed to stroll in the box, isn't he? From the wing, basically, from the throw. And again, it's disappointing, because it comes after Liverpool, you know, created the chink of light again in the tie by scoring a goal, and then they only hold on to that scoreline for, I think it was 14 minutes before another one hits the net. So really, really disappointing. And obviously at that point, Real do what Liverpool didn't do and showed a bit of nous and just dropped deep, said, come on then, come at us. We're gonna close this out. We're happy to take 3-1 to Anfield. And Liverpool simply couldn't get through. And, you know, obviously Klopp threw the kitchen sink at it in the end. There was all kinds of subs and bizarre players coming on the pitch that you hadn't seen for some time, Shaqiri, etc. But it just wasn't there. And look, you know, I'm always one to look on the bright side. And I've been at many of those brilliant nights we've had at Anfield, Barcelona, Dortmund, you know, Olympiacos, Chelsea, whatever you like, Manchester City. I won't be there for this one, and neither will anyone. We won't have the crowd. We won't have the atmosphere. And look, as I say, I like to look on the bright side, but I'm finding it difficult about this tie now, because Liverpool need to score two goals. They've only scored one at Anfield this year. You know, it's 6 defeats and a draw at Anfield in 2021, and only one goal for Liverpool, and that came in the 4-1 defeat to Manchester City. So there's a bit of a weirdness about Anfield now, a weirdness that every ground's got and that it hasn't got the fans, but also a weirdness in terms of the current record and how the players feel about playing there. So all of that suggests to me that, you know, it's a very minute chance of Liverpool getting through now.
Very hard not to imagine Madrid not scoring as well, which makes it doubly difficult. I should let people know Chilwell's just scored an unbelievable goal in Seville against Porto. It's brilliant. I mean, look, it's a bad touch by a defender, but he nips in and takes it around the keeper and just finishes like a left back or left wing back is not meant to. So Chelsea are 2-0 up this evening. It's Bayern 2, PSG 3. We're talking to Gareth Roberts of the Anfield Wrap. Gareth, who's having a good season for Liverpool? I know that's an odd question, so you could be tempted to say, well, no one, because look what's happening. But who's doing okay? Like, because I've seen a lot of people say Mane's form gone off a cliff, and they looked at him last night throwing himself on the ground and saying, he's not having it, and the front three aren't getting on, and then midfield's been a mess, and obviously the back four has been so changed all the time, and we all saw Carragher and Neville on Trent Alexander-Arnold on Monday, so a lot of heat on him. You're watching them all the time, every minute, talking about it, thinking about it. Give us a kind of ranking, you know, start with best player down. Who's done okay down?
I think you've got to start with Mo Salah. 27 goals this season. Seven of them are penalties, but penalties still need to be scored. And Mo still being a threat, always will be a threat. He was shackled, obviously, last night, but, you know, Liverpool's midfield but just simply wasn't there. So, you know, it's difficult for Mo to get on the ball and do something in those circumstances. So Mo's top of the shop with his 27 goals. You can't really sniff much at that. I think you've got to put Diogo Jota there because he did obviously miss a spell and we really missed him in that spell. And yet he scored 12 goals for Liverpool already in a short space of time. And he's fitted right in. He looked great coming off the bench. He looks great when he's starting. I think he's been a brilliant addition. And it was a bit left field for Liverpool to go and sign him, really. You know, I don't think anyone expected it. When he did come in, we all wondered how it would work, how he would fit in. Would it work having such an established front three and then this fella coming in from Wolves? But it certainly has worked. So he's been absolutely brilliant for us as well. And then beyond that, you know, you do start to struggle there, right, really, because it's been a struggle of a season. Look, we've constantly, as I keep saying all the way through, we do try and look on the bright side because you've got to, because otherwise, you know, you'd end up thinking, well, what's the point here? But, you know, Liverpool have lost 12 games this season and 10 of them are since the turn of the year. So it's hard to be talking about players that have done well in those circumstances. I would put Fabinho up there. I think he did brilliantly at centre-half, although we then, as a consequence, missed him in midfield. But you can't fault what he did at centre-half. He did start to get caught a little bit towards the end of his spell at centre-half in terms of a few little daft tackles and giving away free kicks in daft areas and things like that. But as soon as he's moved back to midfield, aside from the other night, you've seen the difference that he makes, and he's absolutely world-class in that position. So you've still got to put him right up there, I think, for performances this season.
And what are you seeing, hearing, or thinking about the form of Mane and Firmino this year?
Yeah, patchy, to say the least. I mean, Mane, obviously, particularly poor against Madrid. He still managed to get 12 goals this season, which makes him joint second top scorer for Liverpool this season. But he's been visibly frustrated, I think, with his own form. He's been beating himself up. And he's quite sort of spiky as a player anyway, and you like when he's like that. But it seems to have tipped to the point where he's being spiky almost with himself and getting in his own head. And I think he's a player that looks like, to me, he could really do with the rest, physically, mentally, a bit of time off. He's been playing football seemingly continuously for a long, long time, and I think maybe it's getting to him a little bit. There's talk beginning in some Liverpool circles that I've seen of, you know, cashing on him, maybe his chips are in, he's had his time, all of that. I'm not too sure. I think it's a little bit early for that kind of talk, and I'm interested to see what he looks like when the reset button's being pressed and it's a new, fresh season again.
What about Firmino?
Firmino, another one. Patchy, he is the top. He's got the top number of assists for Liverpool this season, but that is easier this season than in normal seasons in that he's only got 7, but that makes him the top assist maker this season. He's not scored enough goals. I think if you look at his expected goals as well, that tells you the story in that. I think he's got 6. His expected goals tell you he should have got 12. If he did have 12, I think we'd be talking about, you know, being a little bit more satisfied with him. But he's missed some really bad chances that he should be taking. He's another one where it looks like he's got the weight of the world on his shoulders. He's one, I think, particularly, he's missed supporters. And I know, like, other supporters will say, well, our players are in the same boat and all that, and I get that. But Firmino, for me, as an entertainer, he's got that big smile. He's flamboyant. He dresses flamboyantly. He likes to do a trick. And there's no point in doing tricks when there's no one in the stadium. You don't get that instant feedback. I think about Liverpool's last win at Anfield, which was December, against Tottenham Hotspur, in front of 2,000 fans. Firmino scores in the last minute. He runs to the cop. He runs to the other end of the pitch to celebrate with those 1,500 fans that were on the cop. There was 500 elsewhere. And he loves that. He loves that. And I think him in particular, he's missing that. So he's another one. I know he's starting to... His age is starting to click on a little bit and things like that. But again, I wouldn't be looking to get rid or anything like that. I think he's been brilliant for Liverpool. I've loved watching him. But this season's got to go down as a disappointment for Firmino as well.
And so, like, are you of the sense that a rest over the summer for a lot of the players recharges this squad who have been, like, full on for how many years now? And it's a thin squad and they have juggle several fronts, and then Van Dijk comes back, and you know, things, you know, like this horrible memory of the season becomes a more distant one, and things pick up again pretty quickly. Or is increasingly, not least because of the front three situation, talk of end of era and rebuilding is obviously out there as well. Where do you sit on that spectrum?
I think there will be a big uplift in having the likes of Van Dijk back, because not only is he a brilliant player, I get the sense that he's brilliant to be around, that he's a valued teammate, that he helps to set the tone of the culture in the dressing room and all that kind of stuff. I think he's been a miss on that front. Henderson the same.
Yeah.
I think we really missed Henderson in Madrid last night. So having those players fit and available and around and about, I think will make a difference. Joe Gomez as well, who I don't think gets talked about enough. I think he's a brilliant defender. Joe at his very best. Matip as well, obviously. So I think those players being back in situ will make a difference. But I do feel now that we do need to get someone else in up front, because I think Origi's gone past his shelf life now for Liverpool. I love the fella for what he's done for us and his crucial goals and his goals against Everton and his goals in the European Cup final. You know, all of those things, of course. But I do think he is now an option that Jurgen Klopp doesn't want to turn to at times. I think he himself would benefit from playing regularly for someone. And if he goes out the door, you need someone coming in, and you need someone coming in who you can rely on, who's probably going to cost Liverpool a little bit of money. But my hope is that, like with Jota, if we did do that with a striker, it lifts the performances of the other. Because, as you say there, they've all played regularly for, what, 3 years now?
Yeah, they're wrecked. They're
wrecked for one. So they would get that rest if you've got someone to rotate with. But also, I think it sharpens the mind when you think your own position is under threat in any job. So, you know, I like to think that should we bring someone in, and I think we will, then, you know, that sharpens the minds and sharpens the players, and we see them more like what we're used to seeing them. Obviously, Salah aside, because he scored 27. Yeah.
And Gareth, what is the word on Merseyside? Does Salah want out?
I don't know. It's an odd one, that. No one really seems to know. Him doing these interviews with the Spanish press is interesting.
Does he realise, like in 2021, that interviews in Spain make it back to the UK?
Well, indeed. But also what's interesting about that is he never stops for the Liverpool press or the UK press. You know, he famously in mixed zones picks up a pace, or will be on his phone, or will be talking. You know what I mean? He's not one for interviews. He's good when he does them. But the fact that he chooses to do them with Spanish press and says what he says, him and his agent must know what that results in. I like to think personally, he just would like another contract. He just would like a big contract, big wages, have that security and go, okay, I'm happy now. While that isn't there and while that isn't sorted, I like to think they're playing a little bit of a game. But again, I would like Liverpool to get that sorted, and I think all Liverpool fans would.
Yeah, I'm sure. Okay, and oh, sorry, one last very quick one. We're kind of out of time. I just wanted to ask, so, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold was probably over in Madrid around the time the Monday Night Football Neville Carragher thing was engrossing a lot of football fans, and it was really good TV. But, like, it's tough if you're Alexander-Arnold. You know, that heat on you and that scrutiny and being left out of the England squad, obviously, was a blow. And then last night was not much of a help either. From what you know of him, I don't know if you had him on the show, or, you know, you might hear bits about him. He's a local lad. Is he likely to be affected by all that and take that in? Would he have known, do you suspect, Carragher and Neville back home were doing that? Would he be glancing on his phone and keeping abreast of all that?
I think he is very aware of how his performances are seen. We have had him on the show where we talked mainly with him when we had him on the show about stuff he does in the community, which is an awful lot, by the way. And he's a cracking lad. But in terms of his football, he's always knuckled down. He's always worked hard. He's always worked hard closely with the coaching staff. I mean, let's remember, he was actually a midfielder, and he's been converted to the position he's in because Liverpool and then Trent latterly could see that that was the way to get him into the first team, essentially. Mm. And there's still talk, and there always will be talk, about should he be back in midfield because of his skill set. But I think he will know himself when he's done badly and when he's done well. I mean, you saw what he was like at Arsenal when he whips that ball in. He's delighted with his own performance. Mm. Equally, he will be down. I always think about when we played Manchester City and he had a bit of a tough time against Sane, and everyone, you know, were writing him off then. But he had a bit of a tough time against Rashford as well. And then he bounced back from that and was absolutely brilliant. And everyone was talking about how good he was. So I expect them to bounce back again. It is tough, though, and I think we should remember the age of the lad. And again, as you keep saying all the way through this interview, the amount of football he's played as well.
Yeah.
He has suffered from COVID. He has suffered from an injury. And the spotlight on him must be tough. It must be tough for anyone. Of course, he will know about everyone talking about it. It's been on the back pages. You know, Gareth Southgate doing what he did, like it or not. I didn't like it because I knew what would follow in the media. I think maybe he could have treated them a little bit better, given his talent, given what he can do for club and country in the future. I think Gareth should have known the kind of fuss it was going to create by leaving him out in that fashion.
Gareth, great to have you with us. Gareth Roberts from the Anfield Wrap. Cheers, Gareth.
Thank you. Cheers.
So, Champions League has gone full time. Chelsea 2-0 winners and PSG 3-2 away to Bayern Munich.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.